Cool. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. This session is called Application Lifecycle Management for SharePoint and Office App Development. My name is Brian Farnhill. I'm a Senior Premier Field Engineer with Microsoft Australia, based out of Canberra, the nation's capital. I've spent many, many moons working with SharePoint, mostly in the dev space, which has been both fun and challenging, as I'm sure any SharePoint developer knows. Spent a lot of time in the PowerShell space of late. Get around to conferences wherever the guys will have me, and enjoy spending a lot of time with my Xbox. But I've got 60 minutes to talk about something other than me here, so let's cover off what we're looking to go through with you guys this afternoon. What I want to talk about is just a quick touching on what ALM is, just to make sure we've all got a common understanding of what application lifecycle management is. Then I'm going to talk through just some common areas to do with ALM. I'm going to talk about planning and architecture, which is the less fun part of development, but we'll just have a little bit of a conversation about it. Then go through some stuff around testing strategies, continuous integration strategies and deployment for SharePoint and Office add-ins, and a little bit around how to gather telemetry and feedback in your Office and SharePoint add-ins and some of the processes there. So really looking to provide a sound technical foundation to how to implement some good processes on the technology side of things that can complement a good ALM strategy. So what is application lifecycle management? Now, you've probably seen something like this before. It's not a new chart. We're essentially trying to look at application development from start to end. Now, a term that's turning up more and more when we're having this discussion is DevOps, where we're really looking to facilitate better collaboration between our operations and our devs guys. And there's some other topics on DevOps throughout this conference that are worth checking out as well that I'll mention the references to at the end. But what we're really looking to cover off from the devs is everything from the requirements definition, how we plan architectures, through to the dev and the test work, what we're doing in the CI space, over on the ops side, change management, release management, how we're managing monitoring and telemetry, and then, of course, maintenance to be able to feed information back into that dev cycle. So we're really looking to cover everything in that space. Now, looking at ALM historically for Office and SharePoint development, it's not always been the most straightforward thing to implement a good ALM process for Office development, for SharePoint development, depending on what you were doing. First of all, we had a lot of challenges when it came to planning architecture, just by the nature of how we were doing these customizations, building solutions that were designed to run inside of another product, so inside of SharePoint and inside of Office, became very challenging for getting a finite understanding of what we were doing to the infrastructure and the architecture of our solutions, given we were playing inside of somebody else's playground, essentially. The learning curve has had a fairly steep angle on it traditionally, particularly with SharePoint, but even some of the older COM APIs and things like that from the Office add-in side of things. Unit testing and load testing. Show of hands, how many people have developed server-side code for SharePoint? Just raise your hand. Now, keep your hand up if you regularly wrote unit tests for that. Yeah, one guy. and I didn't put my hand up there either, so I've been guilty of this. It was hard dealing with, going through all the mocking and that sort of stuff. It was not a straightforward or pleasant experience, which meant a lot of the time it got overlooked. It's the same for load testing, where we were looking at trying to measure load of a customization we were writing within somebody else's application where we had no control. Then on to continuous integration, trying to deploy to a SharePoint server. That was not always good news. Telemetry and monitoring, again, within other people's applications were, you know, there were some hiccups and things we had to look out for on that front. And then even just maintenance and updates. You know, we want to deploy server-side code to SharePoint. There goes the application pool. IIS reset later, and we've brought the farm back up. Things have not always been easy for us in the ALM space when we've been doing Office and SharePoint development. But it's not all bad news. We've got good news, and it's good news based around the add-in model, formerly known as the app model, for those of you playing along with how frequently our marketing people like to change terms. But the add-in model, which makes more sense from a naming perspective, I think, anyway, really focuses on letting you decouple your customizations from Office and from SharePoint. Right? So what this means for us as developers is a lot of those challenges I was just describing, they start to go away. And we start to be able to adopt better processes that are being used more broadly in the industry, that are easier to find references for and skills for, and adopt those into what we're doing. We have open standards-based APIs. We have lots of REST endpoints dealing with JSON data, and for the most part, as well as our client-side APIs. There are plenty of ways that we can use standard approaches to accessing this stuff. And because we're now no longer running within an application, the testing strategies for what we're doing in both the Office and SharePoint space, they become a lot simpler and easier to repeat with a consistent result than we've ever been able to do before, which means from an ALM perspective, we can really start to tighten things up. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit to planning and architecture here just to sort of set the stage for some of the decisions that can then have a flow-on effect for how we're going to implement our ALM processes within Office and SharePoint Dev. So, things that change when we're talking about the add-in model specifically, first of all, understanding what type of app is it you need. So in the SharePoint space, am I doing a SharePoint add-in? Am I doing a provider-hosted add-in? Am I doing something that doesn't run within SharePoint at all and just connects in externally? The Office space, which desktop clients am I targeting? Am I doing task panes? Am I doing mail add-ins for new messages? Understanding the options for where we can hook in and the types of apps we're looking to develop, but then going to have flow-on decisions for how we can do things such as building for testability of that type of app. And building for testability needs to be something we consider from word go. Testing isn't something that we slap on after the fact. I'm sure you've all heard that line before, but we all too often see that that's what's happened. So we need to be able to make sure we've got a documented plan that we can communicate with everyone, including our ops guys, because we like including them in the process, because DevOps is a great thing. And when we're talking about planning of the add-in model specifically, there are a few things that we need to sort of consider and plan up front. Where am I hosting it, for example? If I'm going in the provider-hosted model for my add-ins in SharePoint, am I going to put that on an IIS server? Am I going to run that in Azure on websites? Am I going to run it on something that's .NET or do I got PHP skills? Am I going to go run it on like an Apache server or something? One of the big things to consider from a planning perspective, though, particularly when you do go that provider-hosted option, is multi-tenancy of your application. So this is a scenario where I've got multiple SharePoint site collections coming to my one remote URL because I've gone provider-hosted. How am I separating the data that I get from those different sites and ensuring I maintain the tenancy of those site collections within my app? Now, if I'm in a scenario where I need to build for that, that obviously has big implications on what I need to do from a testing strategy to ensure that I'm complying with all that. So there are things that need to be planned for up front there to make sure that you can line up with them later on. As well as, are you targeting an on-prem deployment or going to the store? There are things you need to consider and plan for there because the store has different requirements. For example, I can't use a full control permission for an app that I'm publishing into the store. But the big one I do like making a point of when I'm starting this ALM discussion with a customer is just look at the skills you've got in-house. All right, if I've got a bunch of guys that know how to do PHP development, why would I force them to go and do something else? The open APIs that we use within the new add-in model facilitate development across a number of different platforms. So sticking to what we know is going to be beneficial. So two things to call out in the space of just planning and architecture for ALM stuff in SharePoint. Visual Studio Online. Anyone not had a look at VSO? Yep. So VSO, you can go and sign up for free. 5 users per tenant, absolutely no cost. You can start checking in code. You can manage your work items. There's also a stakeholder license. So if you've got people in your organization that don't use code, that just need to log in and manage work items, they can do that for free. So it's 5 developers plus as many non-developer people as you want. And we're not charging you for that. All right, and you can use that to go in, start playing around with it, understanding the platform, and use that to start doing better tracking of your work, of your sprints, and then into your release management process. And we'll go through some strategies of how VSO can help in the Office and SharePoint development space. And the second one, for anyone who's looking at doing planning and architecture of how can I make a solution work, the Office patterns and practices, the PNP stuff. So many good code examples across lots of different platforms for all sorts of scenarios. There was a session that Steve did earlier today that sort of introduced what that is. So if you're not familiar with the patterns and practices stuff for Office and SharePoint Dev, absolutely go and have a look at that at dev.office.com. All right, but enough of the boring planning and architecture stuff. I want to talk more of the technical pieces to you. Testing. Now, when I sit down and start having a discussion with testing with my customers, the first question I like to throw back to them is, well, what are we hoping to achieve from our testing? Why are we actually doing this? You know, we look at the copy and paste dictionary definition here. We're looking to make sure that our system meets a bunch of different types of requirements. Now, the thing to understand here is that we need to have processes for how we validate this. Now, I don't always have a specific requirement in every category. For example, the customer might not have had specific thoughts about a performance plan. around what the acceptable load times are, and therefore they don't have documented requirements for that. But we should probably still look at what we're going to do from a testing perspective to be able to meet it, because you know that if you've got a slow running app, your customer's going to let you know about it. So testing in the office dev space, again, like I mentioned earlier, had been challenging. Unit testing against the server-side object model was not fun. It got a little bit easier with more recent versions of Visual Studio, like when we added the mocking stuff into Visual Studio 2012. It got a little bit easier, but it required some sort of knowledge and understanding of how those mocks would behave in a test to correctly go and test your business logic without necessarily trying to just test that the API would do what it needed to do. Load testing as well was something that was also really tricky in that if I wanted to do a load test on my SharePoint farm to determine what the impact of my customizations were, I would essentially need to do some sort of load test to get a baseline of what SharePoint was doing and then compare SharePoint after my solution was in to determine what was the impact of the code that I've added to the platform. And given that, you know, SharePoint being the unwieldy beast it is sometimes, you're going to get different numbers, and it makes it very hard to get a consistent baseline of exactly how much of that performance is your app and how much was SharePoint and what SharePoint just happened to be doing at that point in time. The story for VSTO was, again, not also entirely straightforward. Being able to automate functional tests and that sort of stuff in the VSTO side of things was not entirely straightforward either. And often at times when you started looking at the infrastructure required to just have a test environment for SharePoint around, particularly if you wanted one that you could load test that was like for your production environment, is a big investment in having that hardware just sitting around so that you can go and perform your load testing to be able to put that rubber stamp on your application when you went to launch it. So the add-in model makes this easier for us. Because we're separating from the SharePoint platform, I don't need SharePoint to be able to go and test my app. It's just a web app for all intents and purposes. I can create standard web tests, test it on an IIS server, and come up with results of what my app is doing in complete isolation from SharePoint. The same is said for the Office add-ins. They're all HTML and JavaScript based. Right? They appear in a task pane or in the appropriate places in the Office client, but because they're all web-based, I can come back to standard web-based testing approaches to be able to validate what I'm doing with the development there. So straight away, I don't need that infrastructure of a whole SharePoint environment that's like-for-like of production just to go and test my individual apps. It makes it much easier for us to be able to go in and do that sort of stuff. There are some other benefits as well that we get from being able to use these web tests in that I can create a load test for my app, but that can then also form part of my monitoring strategy for what I do when I get to production. So within Azure, we have the ability to upload a web test into Application Insights so that I can execute that same test, those same set of steps that I've recorded from the cloud every 5 minutes from up to 3 different locations around the globe to give me validation that I'm still passing those same functional tests that I used to determine that the application was behaving as it should before I went to release, after I've gone live. That also means that if something fails there, the developer knows exactly which test it was that failed because they more than likely wrote the test and they're able to quickly identify what the likely piece of functionality is that needs to be repaired. So there's a few different options for being able to set this up, and I'll go and demo what it looks like in a minute. But Visual Studio Online as well. So I mentioned we can get VSO to execute load tests for us. Now, under that free account that you can sign up for that I mentioned earlier, you'll get 20,000 virtual user minutes per month for free of load testing. So this means I could simulate 20,000 users for 1 minute or one user for 20,000 minutes or any combination in between and not have to pay a cent for any of the load testing. I don't need infrastructure in my on-prem environment at all, and I can easily switch my load testing from on-prem to Visual Studio with just one option inside of my local Visual Studio to just say execute in VSO or execute on-prem. So it's really easy to take existing investments in load testing and start taking advantage of the fact that VSO offers a much larger scale of what you can do. But again, 20,000 virtual user minutes a month as a starting point for free is a really great way to sort of dip your toe in and get a bit of a feel for what load testing is like. So testing techniques and strategies, stick with what works for your platform. We can open up the .NET, we can have PHP, we can have any number of platforms. Test the way you know it works. Unit testing for JavaScript is something that I'm really starting to talk to customers about as well. There's a lot of customers, particularly who are working on SharePoint-hosted add-ins or the Office add-ins, where there's a very heavy use of HTML and JavaScript. Being able to develop for testability. There's some really great documentation out there. My personal favorite framework is QUnit, but there's a number of them out there that you can play around with and exercise. Developing your JavaScript in a way that is unit test friendly so that you can be testing that script and not treat it as just, you know, a bit of script that I copied off the internet and it worked, so we pushed it out, is going to help you provide a more stable platform. And again, having that load testing with a genuine level of separation between what's going on in Visual Studio and, between what's going on inside of your application and Office or SharePoint is going to, again, help provide you a better result there. So what we're going to do now is I'm just going to flick over to my laptop, which is just having a minor freak out here. So bear with me 1 second. And hopefully we will resume right here. Excellent. Cool. So one of the first things I wanted to start with was showing you guys what the load testing strategy is like. So to begin with, if I want to put together a load test, is I need to identify the number of scenarios that I want to simulate to be able to test. So that gets really, really easy inside of Visual Studio in that I can just create, I'm going to add a new item here, and we're going to add a web performance test. I did this to me when I tried to demo it the other day as well. What that normally gives me, in true here's one I prepared earlier style, is it gives me a test that looks a little bit like this. Now, what I've done in this case is when you say give me a new web test, it'll open Internet Explorer with the Web Test Recorder plugin there. This is something that you can hand to a non-developer, a anyone who's not even in a technical role, just someone who understands the application, and tell them, go and perform that scenario. The plugin will record the individual steps of what's happening, the URLs they're going to, the form values they're entering, what's being returned, expected response codes, that kind of thing. And when they hit done, that gets translated out to something that looks like what's on this screen here. So I can then use this to be able to go through and repeat it and say, just make sure that that test works. So I've got the ability to just execute that one test in the context of just itself. And it says, yep, cool, that's expected, and I'm getting green lights, and my test works for that one user. So I can build up any number of those that I want and then flick over and create a load test out of that. So in this case, I've only got the one test, but you can see the heading there, test mix. I can add as many tests to my load test as I want and specify a percentage of each test that needs to be executed to say this is roughly what my users are going to be doing with my app. From there, I'm able to specify things like browser mix, network mix, number of users. Do I want the number of users to step up over time throughout the test? How long do I want the test to run for? Now, we get some options, and if you create a test project, Visual Studio will give you this local test settings file. Now, if I wanted to switch between local and on-prem, between the cloud and on-prem, I have literally one button here. I can say execute my tests locally or run them using Visual Studio Online. I don't have to change a single thing in any of my test setup. It's the same test file that gets executed in both locations. So the only option within my test is down the bottom here. You'll see I've got location, Southeast Asia. So this is for when I upload it to Visual Studio Online of where do I want to simulate my users for. So if I right-click on that and go into the properties, it's going to connect to my Visual Studio account and provide me with a list of the locations that I can execute from. So it's not every single one of our Azure data centers. So you'll notice the absence of both the Australian data centers there. So the closest ones we have here will be from Southeast Asia. But what I'm going to do with this load test now is I'm just going to tell it to go and execute. It's going to go and connect to Visual Studio Online, upload my test, and then start running that out of the Southeast Asian data center. It'll bring me the results back as the test is running, and I can really easily do a load test of my SharePoint app. So it's just finishing uploading the test there. So the app itself is nothing special. We're just connecting to SharePoint, loading a list of the individual lists out of that site. So you can see I'm using the client site, using the .NET client-side object model to connect back in and just read data out of that site that I've installed it into, just as a basic concept here. So it's going to run through now and start load testing. Now, one of the great things that we do get out of these load tests is you'll notice one of the first messages I get when I execute a test against VSO is it tells me this test is going to use 5,000 of my virtual user minutes. So if I look at that and see, oh, that number's too high, I can hit stop before it starts, go and adjust my test settings to an appropriate value, either higher or lower, depending on who's flipping the bill. But at this point, that's going to go away and run. So while that's running, I want to show you an even simpler way to be able to execute a load test. If you log into your Visual Studio Online tenant, and you click on Load Test at the top here, it'll bring you to a page that looks like this, where I can actually create a simple URL-based load test from within the browser. I do not need an edition of Visual Studio that has the testing tools in there. So let's go and just flick over to my app here and just copy and paste the URL. I'm going to paste that in there, and I'll give it one of the things. I can choose a location for it to run from, just the same as I could from Visual Studio. So we'll say this one can run from South Central US. It'll simulate 200 users for a minute. We can specify think times. These are things that are also customizable in Visual Studio, what the simulated browser mix is going to be. But I hit test now, and it's going to create that load test for me and go and execute it against my application right there without even opening Visual Studio. It'll then show me the results live in the browser as the test is executing, and I'm able to do a really simple load test without any real effort of being able to put it together. That'll again be deducted from those virtual user minutes that I've got. So hopefully by now, if I flick back over to here, yeah, this is still thinking about it. It's acquiring resources at the moment. So other testing related things, stuff I like to be able to go through and show is my unit testing. So because what I've got here is essentially just an ASP.NET MVC application, I can use just standard unit testing approaches where I can be able to go through and validate my logic as I need to. Now, you'll see at the moment I've got a constructor here on my class where if I zoom in, Visual Studio actually gives me hints inside of the IDE about the number of tests that are passing and failing against each individual part of the code. So if I were to go to my test menu here, and an option that I recommend everybody go and turn on is this one up here, Run Tests After Build. How many developers have the habit of just hitting Control-Shift-B every single time I make a few lines of code change just to make sure it compiles and I haven't broken anything? I do it all the time. If I turn this option on, Visual Studio, every time I do that little build option, or as often as I tell it to build, it will actually go and execute the tests locally for me. So I'm just going to press Control-Shift-B there. We can see my build has started. And within a couple of seconds, my test explorer should automatically kick in and start running that test if it knows what's good for it. Because I'm impatient, I'm just going to tell it to run now. But it's going to go and execute my test for me and tell me that all is well and that I haven't broken the code. So as I'm writing, I get a feel for whether or not I'm breaking code. Now again, SharePoint developers, because we didn't really write unit tests beforehand because it was hard, miss out on this sort of integration to know that we were breaking the code until we deployed it into SharePoint and found that out afterwards. So we've got the ability there, so we can see my test is run, and now it says one of one passing. Just like with our JavaScript, we can actually go through and do testing of that. So I've set this one up with some Q unit tests. So an example of a Q unit test. So you can see at the top here, I'm including office.js because what I'm testing here is actually my Word add-in. So office.js is there, and home.js, which is where my logic is. And I'm just using a quick QUnit test and assert.equal, assert.notequal for where I'm doing some text generation, just a really basic concept here. Now, QUnit, normally I can just open that page in the browser, and it'll be able to tell me whether my tests have passed and failed. If you're using something like ReSharper, it actually gives me the ability to execute the tests right here inside of Visual Studio as well. So depending on what your tooling is, so you can see it's opened the browser one for me there. So this is what QUnit looks like, and it tells me both of my JavaScript tests are passing. But it'll also show me that same result inside of Visual Studio here, so I don't need to keep flicking over to my browser to do my validation of my JavaScript stuff. So again, more on the testing front that we can do when we're using the add-in model versus stuff that we would traditionally do when we're doing server-side code with SharePoint. Now, the last little part of this was I mentioned we could make use of those same web tests. And, oh, hold up, there we go, my load tests are finished. So there was the first one from the browser. It shows me average load times, and I get some graphs down here of what that looked like. Hopefully, I went and closed it here, didn't I? Damn, okay. So, again, Visual Studio will show you the same results that came from there. Now, If I flick over into the Azure portal and into an Application Insights instance, so this provides a telemetry platform, which again, I'll talk to that more a little bit later. But one of the things that we get inside of this is this concept of availability testing. So in here, I've got a couple of tests that I've previously created. When I say add new test, it gives me an option of two different types of tests. One is a URL ping test, which is similar to that load test we executed. I give it a URL, tell it what status code to expect, and it'll check that for me every 5 minutes. Conversely, I could choose multi-step test, right, where if I select that one, it's going to ask me to upload a web test file. This is exactly the same web test that we used to record out of Internet Explorer and simulate our load. So we can upload those tests. We can then go and choose test locations. So you see it gives us a list of the data centers to select from. So I could say test it from Russia and Paris, as well as Texas. Define what success criteria is. In this case, it'll inherit that from the web test file. And then it can go and create that. So over here, you can see I've got a couple of different tests that I've done already. I get a view of what the availability has been over the last 20 minutes, hour, the last day, the last 3 days, the average execution time. And I can even set up alerts to send emails to people when those specific tests are failing. So you can see we get a really great story there with those web test files of being able to carry them through from individual functional testing to load testing and performance through to ongoing monitoring in our production environment. This gives us a really consistent tooling set to be able to use from the beginning to the end when it comes to the testing stuff. Okay, so next area I wanted to talk about was continuous integration and deployment. So, show of hands, how many people have set up continuous integration of some sort for server-side code for SharePoint? A couple of people. Steve. So, again, this is not something that was necessarily the most straightforward exercise. The first thing you would need to do, and I'm going to use TFS as the example here because it's my go-to build server. You would need to get a copy of the SharePoint binaries onto your build server. You could install SharePoint on your build server there, which is not necessarily a recommended approach. Generally, there was PowerShell scripts that would extract all the DLLs from your SharePoint server and you could put them onto your build server. This then meant that you needed to keep those up to date. So when you patched SharePoint, you would need to make sure you brought the updated DLLs across so that you were compiling against the same version. Again, not a great story. The other thing that you then needed to do was deal with all the PowerShell remoting stuff to be able to get to your SharePoint server, copy your assets to it, and then execute your deployment scripts on the SharePoint server themselves. Again, got kind of fiddly, particularly given that the SharePoint remoting stuff required a double hop off to the SQL server. So you were never talking to just the web server. You needed to make sure that you contacted it in such a way through either Kerberos or Cred SSP with your PowerShell that it could then talk to SQL so you could have a successful deployment. The Kerberos stuff in particular tended to trip people up a lot, so that, again, it made it really challenging to write and test a build script that would be running from a build server. As well, continuous integration for both VSTO and SharePoint server-side code. The VSTO stuff, you'd need to have a separate VM spun up that had Office installed that you would be able to push stuff to regularly, and that would be where your testing was done, which meant that VM had to be kept up to date with the version of Office you were testing. It was not always the most straightforward experience. So one of the things that helps us out in the new world, particularly where we're going to look to using Azure and the cloud, is the new Visual Studio Online build engine. So for those of you who are familiar with VSO, you may have noticed over the last few months, the new build engine has gone live. It's not XAML-based anymore. We don't edit the build definitions in Visual Studio. It's entirely browser-based. It is much more user-friendly. What you see is actually PowerShell executing to create your build. If you want to get in under the hood of any of those individual build actions, the Visual Studio team have actually published the scripts that they use into GitHub, so you can understand exactly what each one of those build actions is doing and how to manipulate the variables going into it to give you the output you're looking for. So this browser-based approach makes it really easy for us to create builds, and when we want to deploy websites to Azure, for example, this becomes even more straightforward as there are native actions to support that kind of thing. So when we start looking at the world of deployments, Office and SharePoint add-ins, our provider-hosted add-ins and our Office add-ins, we can run those from Azure websites and deploy them very, very easily. Also, if we wanted to run in the on-prem world, using web deploy packages, we can deploy into local IIS servers using TFS on-prem and get a very similar result. It's very easy to script that as opposed to scripting a SharePoint deployment of server-side code. Our script resources, we can go and put wherever we need to in separate websites or CDNs, depending on what our deployment strategy is. And one of the other cool things we get if we look at moving to Azure is this feature called deployment slots in websites. And this means I could have a standard website and create a test slot and a dev slot. Each one of these slots is essentially just another website. So I can deploy my code into a slot and validate that it behaves the way I want it to. And when I'm ready, I can click a button in the Azure portal to switch production with test so that test now becomes production, production goes back to test. If that goes south, my rollback strategy is literally switch it back because I've got that copy of what production was ready to put back in there. Very, very quick process to be able to go through. So now I'm going to walk you guys through some demos of some of that and what that looks like. Okay, so we've got my, let's back over here into my code. So my website, like I said, was quite straightforward, but what I've got set up is a built-in Visual Studio Online that's going to go and push deployments through to that. So to prove that this is all working and not entirely smoke and mirrors, assuming this website wants to load, please don't go down on me now. There we go. I'm going to make a change and make a deployment into that. So just to show you what that process flow looks like. So I'm going to go and open my home page. And let's just add a quick paragraph. Ignite New Zealand rocks. Because I like to play to the home crowd. So we're going to go and commit that. So for the observant of you, you'll see I'm using a Git repository in Visual Studio Online, not the standard TFS source code provider. So I'm going to commit that to my master branch and just sync it. So this is now gone up to Visual Studio Online. So what I want to be able to do then is to deploy that to somewhere that I can test my change before I switch it over into production. So this is where I'm going to go and use my deployment slots against my Azure website. So if we come back into the portal and into my DevOps site, what you'll see that I get here, I'm going to scroll down a little, is a button here that says deployment slots. So you can see I've got one called test that is currently running. Now, for all intents and purposes, that's another website. It gets the same URL with just dash test on the end there. I can create up to, I believe it's 5 deployment slots on most of the standard web hosting plans. The premium web hosting plans, which are starting to come out, I believe go up to 50 if you need to go that far. But what this lets me do is facilitate things like deploy a test, do a switch of it. Alternatively, I can take strategies like have different slots to do things like A-B testing, where I could then use Traffic Manager to route percentages of my users to individual deployment slots and then look at the telemetry and see what's coming out of my A-B testing. So to facilitate some of the settings in a swap like that, if I come into the settings of my website and we come down to, where are we going? Wait for everything to load in there. Application settings. Right, so we see a little message here saying auto swap destinations cannot be configured from the production slot. I meant to do this from the other website. So let me go back to my test slot. And into settings. Application settings. So what we get in here is the ability to define an auto swap and where the auto swap needs to go to. And you'll see in here it's going to show up things like application settings, which come from the app settings section of my web.config file. So if I have things that are environment specific, such as a production slot and a test slot using different connection strings to a SQL database, I can tell it that these are not to be swapped, but there are other settings which might be related to a version of my application that should be swapped. It will handle that for me in the event of wanting to go and execute a swap. So I'm just going to kill that for a second and go back over here. So when I hit the swap button, there we go. It asks me for a source and a destination. In this case, I've only got the two. And it also gives me this neat little preview to tell me that there are things that you might need to be aware of when you do this switch, such as settings not matching up, or like a setting existing in one file but not the other, that you might need to be aware of. So we can review that before we go and trigger the switch. But before we go that far, one of the things I'm going to need to do is actually deploy it into my test slot. So if I go across to Visual Studio Online, you'll see here I've got a pinned item to the homepage of one of my new builds. And you can see the number of builds that I've done and the times and pass-fail rates by the colors indicated on this tile. So I mentioned this is on the new build engine. So I've not built this in Visual Studio. I've come just directly into the browser and created a build. Now, if I want to go and create a new build, just to give you guys a view of what this new build engine can do, and say I want to add a build step. I'm just going to click over to All here really quickly and show you some of the stuff. We've got the ability to do Android builds, cloud service deployments to Azure, PowerShell, run batch scripts, do load tests. We've got Grunt in here if you've got that as part of your JavaScript stuff. We've got Gulp as well. We can call custom MS build actions. We can do NuGet packages and bring those down. Execute PowerShell or use PowerShell on a remote machine. The list goes on. There is a bunch of different stuff in here, including just some generic run scripts and run PowerShell ones so that if there isn't an activity that does what you want it to do, you can literally just give it the PowerShell. These map out to single-use virtual machines where your script will be executed. The machines, usually, I think it's an hour they live for, so your build needs to complete inside of an hour, otherwise the VM will be axed. But whenever you trigger a new build, it just pulls one from the pool, downloads your code, executes your build. So an example of one I prepared earlier is this one here. So you can see I've got a number of steps set up in my build, and I'm just going to queue one really quick, and while it's executing, we'll talk through what it does. So you can see straight off the bat, it's actually showing me the raw PowerShell output here. So I'm just going to leave that there for the moment and flick back over to the definition. We'll come back to that in a minute. So you can see I'm doing a few things here. The first is I'm saying execute a Visual Studio build. Now I get all the usual options here, including my MS build arguments. Now the reason this is important to me is I've got the ability to specify a configuration. Now, one of the things I can do when working inside of Visual Studio with add-ins in the SharePoint model is use what's called publishing profiles. Publishing profiles allows me to specify things like config transformations per profile, and the add-in package types in Visual Studio are also aware of this, so that when I publish a .app package for SharePoint, it can publish the appropriate URLs and client IDs into that. So, for example, if I come back into Visual Studio up to my actual app project, and I right-click and go publish, it lets me say, okay, what profile do I want to publish, the test or the production slot? So if I leave that on test and I just click edit, you see I've got a client ID and a client secret for that there. If I switch that to production, I again also have a different client ID and client secret. So that when I package the app, there's the URL of my production slot on the production one. So that would be what I would publish to the store if that's what I was doing. But my test one, when I click on package the app, has dash test in there for my test slot. So I can take that version of the app package, deploy it to a private site collection where I can validate the test slot and do any of my testing from there. So Visual Studio has that integrated, and I can take advantage of that in my build here. So the next thing I'm doing is I'm executing my tests, because I don't want to deploy it to my test slot unless all of my automated unit tests work. So this is fairly straightforward. I'm just saying grab any DLL that's got the word test in it and go and execute those. Then after that, Azure web app deployment. Now, one of the things we can do here is take a web deploy package, which is a zip file, which has come out of the build output of my first activity, and deploy that into my slot specifically. So you can see I specify a subscription, the name and location of my web app, and I can optionally include the slot name. So again, if you look at the PowerShell that's going on here, it's just the native Azure PowerShell commandlets for doing a web deploy. So it takes the package that was literally just built and goes and deploys that. Now, after that, I'm also publishing the symbols and the actual build artifacts. So that if I go and have a look at what is hopefully now completed, see my build is there and it ran. I can click on the artifacts and go into the drop folder and just click explore. And you can see here, there was the whole output of everything that came out, and all of my NuGet packages and all that sort of stuff, so I can have a look at everything that I dumped into the drop folder. In this case, I was very lazy and just dropped the entire output in there, but you can customize what goes into any of those artifact directories. But there's the full thing. I can see my tests run. I can see there's my issues. I can see the things that have gone in there, the timeline of the individual things and how long everything took. So you can see the deployment took 2 minutes. But all going according to plan, if we come back here now in my test slot, and refresh that page. have a think about it because it's going to re-authenticate me. It's always the fun part where I wait for the net demo to die on me and I have this nervous wait. Oh, working on it. Tell you what, let's just type the URL of the app back in and go back in there. Come on. Yeah, there we go. So you can see it's gone and deployed that through to that deployment slot. So I could now either A, just deploy directly to the production slot if that's the release process that works for me, or I could use that switch button inside of the Azure portal to manage that automation of deployment for me. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is this applies equally well to Office apps. So if I click here to download my Word document example, and we click open here, this is going to pull down a Word document which has already got my app included. I'm just going to copy and paste the URL of my SharePoint site because I know I need that here. Let's flick back to Word and edit the document. So what you'll see inside of Word here is my task pane app that's firing up. Now, this particular task pane app is actually just running inside of that same same Azure website. If you click on the details here and go into the security info, you see the URL there is actually the test slot of my website. So based on those packages and the remote URLs, I've now got a Word app that I can use those same slot strategies on to be able to go and test my task pane add-ins or any of the other add-ins for Office as part of that same approach. So we get some pretty cool advances in what we can do with deployment. Okay, so telemetry and feedback. How many people have heard of Application Insights? Yeah, about half the room. So App Insights is essentially the telemetry platform that we offer inside of Azure that can be used for any number of different types of applications. You can use it for websites. You can use it for mobile apps. You can use it for tablet apps in iOS, in Android, within the Windows stack. Lots of different places that you can fairly easily integrate this into a solution and use it to gather telemetry on what's going on. You've got the ability to go and set alerts from it, which means it's both a strategy to understand how users are using your app, as well as sort of a pseudo-monitoring piece where you can say where too many users have hit the site at the same time beyond what we thought it would, send me an alert so I know what's going on, through to give me infrastructure-related alerts. There's a plugin for the Azure websites which will measure things like hardware performance back into there. Or if you're running on-prem, you can still use App Insights and install the IIS extension, which will publish the same performance data back up, so that we can have a unified view of both the server-side performance as well as the end-user telemetry. So the end-user telemetry is fairly similar to if you've ever played around with Google Analytics, where you drop some JavaScript on the page and it captures those usual sorts of client-side scripts. App Insights behaves much the same. But the benefit we have here is that we get a very holistic view from the client to the application itself through a NuGet package where you can add custom telemetry through to the server-side performance all in one integrated reporting platform. So that makes it really, really easy for us to start being able to gather information about how people are using our apps as well as things that go wrong. I can capture exceptions and stack traces and publish those in there and use it as part of my troubleshooting strategy to be able to quickly address what goes on inside of my app. So if we're looking at using SharePoint-hosted apps, nothing stopping me from putting that same JavaScript chunk directly into my app and then capturing my own telemetry within the SharePoint-hosted stuff. For provider-hosted, if I'm in Azure, I use that website extension, or if I'm on-prem, I've got the IIS extension, and I can start capturing server-side performance and be able to publish those back up into the portal. And if I'm taking the approach of an app that's external to SharePoint and just connecting back in, well, I can do whatever I want. I can use any combination of these telemetry points to publish the appropriate data back in there for me so I can do reporting and trending on the data. So, I mean, some of the typical questions I like to ask when I'm looking at the context of SharePoint apps specifically, you know, the basic things of how many people are actually using it, how many different tenants are using it. So this is an interesting one if I'm publishing an app to the store, for example. This gives me a view of how many different, you know, something.sharepoint.com URLs are accessing my provider-hosted app. Then things like what are the build numbers of SharePoint that are accessing my app? So this becomes important in cases of like API versioning and that sort of thing. So if there was a specific cumulative update that made changes to the client-side object model and I'm having issues with builds that are lower than that, I can identify that very quickly through the build number attached to that request, because it gets all handed over and we can capture that. Then we can look at, are there trends in errors? This becomes really interesting when we start exporting the data. So App Insights in all but the free plan, so there is a free plan available as well as the paid ones, will give you the ability to do what's called continuous export, where we dump all the data into blob storage, where from there we can do whatever you want with it. I've seen scenarios where we've demonstrated that we can take that data and put it into SQL Azure, for example, and then go and put it into something like Power BI, where I can then start asking very natural text queries over my telemetry to start pulling out trends and understand the information a little bit more deeply. So we can get quite complex with it depending on what your reporting requirements are. The last one, though, that, and I'll demonstrate this in a second, is just understanding what's the performance of your client-side calls. So if your page takes 600 milliseconds to load, how long of that 600 milliseconds was spent waiting for SharePoint to respond back to the server to send it down to your end user? So there's some inbuilt stuff around how we track dependency calls like that. And we'll get into a bit of a demo here, and I'll show you what some of this looks like. So we'll just close off the build there. So one of the things you'll notice if you come into the new Azure portal and create a website is it will automatically create an Application Insights instance for you for that website. All right, so we spin that up for you for free so you can have a look, and we have a free plan, so this costs you nothing to start exploring. The major differences between our plans are the amount of time we will keep the data for, as well as the number of data points you can call per second and a total number of data points, per month. But so we work through those, and then you pay for additional data points beyond a certain amount we'll include each month. All the details are on the Azure website with the pricing calculators. But let's go and have a look. So straight away, you can see that I've got two separate telemetry sources here, one for my production slot and one for my test slot. So this way, I can go and do things like load testing against the test slot and capture all the telemetry from my load test without having any impact on the production slot. So let's click into here and have a bit of a look. So straight off the bat, you'll see we get a few basic graphs, server response time, browser load time, the number of requests, failed requests. And each of these I can actually drill down into to get more information. So like the browser load time, for example, I can click on that to drill down and get a bit more of an understanding of what was going on at the client side during the execution here. And it's hopefully going to load something for me. Cool. So I can see client processing time, the send request time, receive time. So I get a feel for the network stuff, browser exceptions that are going on, raw page views, what the most popular pages were and that sort of thing. If I scroll a little bit further down, we get into things like alert rules. Now, any of the data points that are being captured in App Insights here, I can trigger alerts on. So, for example, I can come in and create an alert. Choose a specific resource, so my test one, give it a name, but then pick any of the item counts, so the performance counters that we're publishing up or any of the custom ones that we're recording in. So like score was an example of one that I built into my code as a demo. I can then go and set alerts on that to get really detailed in my monitoring of my application. But we can use it for a few cool things as well beyond the basic stuff. We get some trending information down here, so the number of users, custom events, page views, so the up arrows indicate that it's all trending up because I ran a load test immediately before this session started. And we can drill down into some of that. Now, if I, for example, go into my server response time and drill down on that one, this is where we start to break up the difference between the load time of my application and the load time of the calls to external dependencies. So things like calls to a SQL Server database will show up in here, as well as remote HTTP calls. In this case, calls to SharePoint Online to retrieve data from there. So you can see the overall server response time, and then if I move my mouse along here, it'll show me what the average dependency duration was at the same time. If I scroll down to the bottom here, you can see dependency durations by external dependency. So in this case, I can see brianfarnhill.sharepoint.com because that's my Office 365 tenant. So if I click into that one, I can get some more detail about what was going on inside the calls to that tenant. Firefox wants to hang on me. That's not ideal. Here we go. So we can see the number of dependency calls and the average dependency duration. And we can start to go and do some filtering and things here. So if I filter, for example, and I might come down and say, show me, there you go, I'm looking at just the home page at the moment. But if I change that to this lists call, for example, which again loads more data in, right, as opposed to my home page, which just gets the username, and we click update, I'll actually see that the dependency duration jumps up dramatically because it's loading more data. And we can see fairly obviously where I started running my load test there. So we can start creating some fairly customized views. And at any point in there, we can click this Save Favorite button to generate a set of favorite reports for me as an individual user. And then the cool bit about that is I can then take any of these reports and be able to go through, say, something like this. And there's an option to pin these things, which is not showing up for some reason. Pin them back to the homepage in the Azure portal. But so what we can do with this from a code perspective is actually kind of cool. So we're going to close out of that. We're going to go and have a look at my, where's my telemetry classes? So when I want to record custom telemetry, I'm using a class here called the telemetry client. So when you add app insights to your package inside of Visual Studio, it will download the application insights NuGet package. So we publish regular versions of that. And it's got a .NET API that I can wrap my calls up in. So in this case, the telemetry client is what I want to use to publish a particular event. Now, you can see the next thing I'm doing is just generating a dictionary with all of the custom values I'd like to record against specific events. Now, in the case of SharePoint here, I want to capture what happened in a client-side object model call. So what I'm doing here is I'm taking some of the properties passed into this function, my client context. And if I scroll across there, you'll see my SharePoint context. So these are the two classes that I'm going to deal with when creating my .NET client-side connections back into SharePoint. And I'm capturing information from those, such as the SharePoint product number. So I've got the build version of SharePoint I was communicating with, the correlation ID of that individual request. If I ever need to raise a support request with Microsoft, having that correlation ID is going to help. The language of the site they were in, the URL of the site that they were communicating with, as well as just the session ID of my individual telemetry component. Then just telemetry.track event, and we're done. That is literally all that's involved in capturing custom events. So if I go back into the portal and down to my custom events, what we'll see here, when Firefox wants to behave, this is karma for me not demoing with Edge. Still thinking about it. All right, we get a list of all of the events per session, statistics, that sort of thing. I can click into an individual event and see all of the details of these. And then from here, we can really start to drill down through stuff. So we can do the same sort of thing here with exceptions, which is the other one we'll drill down to, and we can very quickly traverse from the high-level aggregate statistics down to detailed statistics of individual requests and individual sessions. So I might come down in here and find here's the last example of one individual event. And if I look at the custom data here, I see the correlation ID of that particular request, because that was all this one was recording. Publish over there. So what have we got? Information, browser, OS version, country or region. So we've got New Zealand. Apparently it thinks I'm in Christchurch. I feel that's probably a slight miscalculation. But yeah, we get all the details, simulation of the IP address, and basically we can pull that down through to an exception as well. So where we've got failed requests, I can drill down, find out what the exception was, what part of my code did it fail in, where was the stack trace, that sort of thing. So we can go from the high level down to the deep nuts and bolts of the telemetry very, very quickly. And the last bit was the client-side stuff, which is, again, very easy to integrate. So if I come down and have a look at my layout, you'll see I've got some stuff here. So this is basically the JavaScript that I got given from the Azure portal. It just says copy and paste this, put it on your page. There's one noticeable difference in mind, though. Instead of just injecting the instrumentation key, which is a GUID that maps to your telemetry instance, into the code directly, what I'm doing is I'm actually reading it out of my web.config file. So this is another one of the transforms that I'm doing in my web.config file based on am I publishing to test or production to make sure that I hit the unique telemetry instance for each slot on my website. So that way I don't end up with test accidentally publishing its telemetry to production or vice versa. So I do that there. I've also got the same thing in the layout for my Office add-in because it's just HTML and JavaScript. So this means I can now use exactly the same telemetry strategy in a SharePoint customization as I do for an Office customization. The same testing strategies, the same deployment strategies. We get a really consistent experience between the two platforms here. And lastly, recording custom events. If I come into home.js, so client-side events, these look very similar to the server-side ones. So in this case, appinsights.track event is the JavaScript that will let me capture a custom event. This is important to understand if you want to go and start developing something that's a single-page application, for example. I'm able to call things like track page load to simulate a new page being loaded, even though your particular browser might not have loaded a new page. So I can still treat a single-page application as having those multiple pages within the telemetry so I can get an understanding for how it's being used. But essentially here, I'm doing the same thing with generating a dictionary of the values I want to capture for my custom event, and I'm sending that back through. So again, very, very easy to start capturing any level of telemetry that we feel we need to capture in regards to our app, push it into the cloud, and get some really great reporting over that. Cool. So wrapping up, we sort of covered off a few things. We had a bit of a chat around what ALM is. We talked about some of the planning and architecture considerations for doing your SharePoint and Office add-ins. We talked about testing strategies, and we saw the load testing. We saw the reuse of those tests to upload them into the Azure portal. We covered off continuous integration, being able to deploy from Visual Studio Online directly into websites in Azure. We could use the same process with TFS on-prem into IIS. We looked at some telemetry stuff around what App Insights is and how it can be used to gather some really clever data about what we're doing with SharePoint from our client-side communication. So we covered lots of different things that when you put them all together, start to add a lot of value to a good ALM process and form part of a wider DevOps strategy where we can use these things to cover the technical sides of that and then match it up with the appropriate people and process to deliver value back to our business. So my call to action for you guys, if you're still writing server-side code, stop it. The new APIs and the new dev approaches, getting on board with the add-in model and the client-side object models, there are so many benefits from an ALM perspective that it really does warrant the time to have a look at what it takes to migrate your previous customizations into this model. Go and have a good look at the processes and solutions you've got currently and start identifying what it's going to take from an architecture and planning perspective to be able to bring them across. There's not always necessarily a one-for-one, if I did this in the server side, I do this on the app model kind of approach. But that's where things like the patterns and practices library that I mentioned earlier are also a really great place to start for resources. And then just go and watch a couple of DevOps sessions. It's a really interesting topic in the industry at the moment. A lot of people are talking about it, but ALM and sort of DevOps, not necessarily directly interchangeable, but there's a lot of overlap between them. So if you're interested in learning more about improving processes in regards to how applications are built and operated, then definitely some stuff of interest. Related sessions, 10 things every Office 365 developer should know, which was yesterday. The dev patterns and practices stuff that Steve did was earlier today, so we can catch the recordings of those. Converting SharePoint on-prem applications to Office 365, so that one's on tomorrow. So again, if you're looking at moving your on-prem solutions to the new app model, the add-in model, worth getting a look at that one. And earlier today, there was also the Microsoft DevOps vision, which again has got some more good content around how DevOps is done from a Microsoft perspective. So on that note, all the usual resources, TechNet, MSDN, Virtual Academy, and Channel 9, make sure you check those out for, if you're into finding some more information. Please submit your evals. I would love to hear your feedback about what you thought of this session so that we can, again, help make the content better for you guys. And on that note, we've got a couple of minutes left to take questions, if anyone's got any. No? Okay, cool. Well, thank you guys for your time. Enjoy the rest of Ignite. And if anyone wants to catch up for some questions now or at the Hub happy hour later, I'll be around. And thank you so much for listening.